From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of October, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, Eric Snodgrass will join us to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. Along the way, update you on the agricultural news for the afternoon and invite you to visit with us on the 20th day of November in Normal, Illinois for the Farm Assets Conference. You can buy your tickets right now today at farmassetsconference.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, I'm traveling today, so no commodity market updates, at least at the moment. We'll get some numbers from Mike Zuzlow when we talk to him in just a moment. A reminder, though, for you to visit that website at willag.org. There you can listen to all of our agricultural programming, at least most of it, online in its entirety anytime you'd like. That's right there at the website, willag.org, and you can play the program off of the website on demand, or if you'd like to listen to the radio programming live from the station, just click on the AM signal up at the top of the page. You can also find us as a podcast in iTunes, the Google Play Store, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and the NPR One app. Many, many ways to listen to the programming, including by asking Alexa or your Google Home. It's all about the way you listen to the program for us. Thank you so much for taking the time to spend with us here at Illinois Public Media and willag.org. Now, coming up in November, I would like you to spend a bit more time with us in person as well for the Farm Assets Conference on the 20th day. That event kicks off at 9:30 with the doors opening in the morning, actually 8 a.m. in the morning. The Illinois Corn Growers Association's annual meeting starts. And then following that, we'll take over with the Farm Assets Conference. Our first panel is called The Supply Chain Wants You, Premiums and Contracts. We'll follow that up with a review of what's happening at Research Park. That's kind of like the Silicon Valley of the Midwest right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Trade, tariffs, grain flow, and the farm economy will come immediately after lunch. And then as we wrap up our day, and we'll end up around 3:30 in the afternoon, we'll pick up our commodity marketing panels with Pete Manhart, Bill Mayer, Merrill Crowley, Wayne Nelson, and Todd Hubbs. You can buy your tickets today online at willag.org. The Farm Assets Conference, it's the 20th day of November in Normal, Illinois. Again, tickets are just $40 online, farmassetsconference.com, willag.org. Now let's take a look at the weather forecast as it comes from the National Weather Service for the afternoon. They're suggesting that tonight in the Urbana-Champaign area, we'll drop to a low of just about 40 degrees on a north wind at around 6 miles an hour. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with a high of 56 in the area, a north-northwest wind at 5 to 7. And Saturday evening will drop to 41 on a calm wind with a south-southwest wind at about 6 miles an hour. For Sunday, showers are likely before 1 p.m., mostly cloudy, a high of 56 degrees, a south-southwest wind at 7 to 17, and Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 39. The extended forecast says Monday should be sunny with a high of 55, Tuesday sunny and 60, Wednesday mostly cloudy and 56, and Thursday mostly sunny will have a high near 53 degrees. Looking at other places around the planet, in South America at this point, Brazil in Sao Paulo, rather in Mato Grosso, is looking forward to a week that should be, well, pretty warm. 90 today, 96 on Saturday, 92 on Sunday. Little rainfall there, and the rest of the week will be in the low 90s to the upper 80s. And their low should be in the low 70s.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for talking to me early today. Can you give me an update of where the markets are trading as we speak?
Yeah, sure, Todd. Good to be with you again. Dece corn staying up around 7 cents on the day. Currently, most of the contracts up 6 to 7. Beans trailing a little bit more, only up about 4 3/4, pretty much across the board. Meals up 350. That puts a Dece meal at 307.80. And then the soft red wheat is the mover to the upside today, reversing yesterday's break. It's currently up about 16 1/4 at 503.5. High of 506 3/4, weekly low from the last 5 weeks, right around 505 1/4. So trying to get back its weekly chart support before we end the day. Cattle are up about $1.20 to $1.62. We have just hit 115 in October fat cattle, pulling back a little bit from that now. Meanwhile, the hogs are up about $1 at 57.85. So we're seeing Dece corn at 368 1/4, Nove beans 846 1/4. Dece soft red wheat 503 1/4.
I know, because we've already recorded Commodity Week. We talk more about wheat in it than we have in maybe months and certainly maybe some years. How important is today in this marketplace? And how important is it that wheat take a leadership role?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that those are the two best questions I've been asked this week. I mean, to explain in adjectives what I've seen in the wheat market, especially since the last Commodity Week that I was on with you, is two words that come to mind are disgust and frustration, and explaining why the wheat had to go down, especially in light of the fact that we found the Egyptian tender and some U.S. soft red wheat bid at 219 FOB, which was the cheapest price if you don't include freight. We are about $15 to $18 less than all of our biggest competitors, including Argentina right now at the Gulf of Mexico, up until, you know, today's move at about $208 a ton. So I think when you look at that, you have the supply-demand fundamentals underneath you to promote the idea we don't need to go any lower. This week, to answer your second question, which I think is more important, is we kind of had a perfect storm. We had the sluggish grain demand, and the harvest weather made it very ripe conditions for a move, a sharp move down, because of the currency volatility and the fact that the Chinese currency was testing a 10-year low and the U.S. dollar was testing its highest level since June of 2017. If we close above 505 and we have a break back in the dollar, which we're seeing right now, I think that really bodes well for the idea that the corn market does not need to go down anymore. And I would say the wheat low is still intact. I'd like to get through Monday's export inspections to make to be on better footing and more solid ground with the wheat low. But I think corn went way too cheap because of the wheat market this week.
Are there any fundamentals that tell you the corn market has some support other than just it went way too cheap and needs to bounce back? So is there any upside potential is really what I'm asking.
Yeah, I know what you're asking. I think it's a great point to really kind of hone in on. I think, yes, the answer is the cash basis is starting to pop up. I've heard more clients get done in certain parts of the country, including parts of Illinois and Indiana, that more in Illinois than Indiana, but have not had the yields in the corn that they really wanted to see. And the cash basis is starting to reflect that, while certain elevators and places, say up in northern Indiana at a pretty large facility for soybeans, are shut down this whole weekend, and other areas are putting in shorter hours and cutting their weekends and their evening delivery hours. We're seeing the corn find the exact opposite situation. And I think that really bodes well where the cash market and the futures market support one another, especially as we go into the holidays.
I suppose, though, everything is limited by the soybeans' ability to be traded on the world market, and the supply side, which is really big and getting bigger even through the harvest season.
Yes, I would say that is exactly the same case that we've been dealing with. Meal is the focal point and will continue to be the focal point. I found it especially interesting that Smithfield CEO did an interview with Reuters today talking about African swine fever and saying it could roil the world pork markets. I just put out a blog on the website about my forecast for hogs and pork and what I see in African swine fever, and I don't see it being contained right now, and it could really upset the apple cart when it comes to bringing in more pork imports versus what USDA is expecting right now into China. But that comes at the expense of a lighter demand base for the soy complex. So yeah, meal is still probably the number one feature for the corn market that will limit the upside potential. While the wheat should not be, it has also played a very strong role in that as well.
And to clarify, African swine fever would upset the world market because once it's identified in a country, for instance, Poland was shut down by the United States this week because they have been identified with African swine fever and not able to control it adequately, according to the USA. So we start to close borders and that creates big problems.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's great for the hogs, or should be great for the hogs, I should say. I think it goes back to what you just said. It's not just in China. It's in the Mediterranean. It's in Eastern Europe. It's in Western Europe. And it's in parts of Africa as well. And there are live ongoing issues in these major areas. And, you know, the European Union's only second to China for world pork production by country. So if the Chinese do need to find pork or find hogs to replace their herd, you know, you're talking about a situation where they're going to be more and more limited than what they would normally be. And that just can only bode better for the U.S. hog industry and pork demand side of the equation. But that comes at a price and comes at a cost, depending on how significant the disease is and how much it continues to spread to the meal and into the feed grains to a lesser degree, but mainly the meal and the soy.
That's Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass from Agrible to take a look at the weather forecast. Eric, what do you see for the week?
Well, Todd, one thing's for sure. After having a pretty decent week this week in terms of drier conditions, plenty of sunshine, we've certainly turned soggy here at the end of the week. And we've got this low-pressure system that's just kind of running through the very southern and southeastern part of the corn, but right now going through parts of southern Illinois, then over there towards Kentucky and Tennessee. And it is going to be moving to the east to become one of our first major East Coast winter cyclones. We're talking about our first big nor'easter. And the pattern that's got us established right now into that configuration where we keep getting these low pressure systems come swinging through is going to bring the next chance of rain here through parts of Illinois on Sunday. So you have a little clipper system that's going to be coming down out of kind of southern Canada, skirting through parts of Wisconsin on Sunday. So that's our real next chance of rain. And just kind of bigger picture here, if we just take a look at these next two rainfall events and put them in context, we do have a lot of places that are still behind on getting things harvested. You know, for example, I just drove on Wednesday from Champaign up to central Wisconsin, and I was surprised at the number of fields I saw, especially in southern Wisconsin and northern Illinois, that still need to be harvested. And in fact, when I was in southern Wisconsin, some of the irrigation pivots, the equipment out there, well, the wheels were actually just lodged into mud after all the incredible amounts of rainfall that they've had, basically stretching from Texas through parts of Kansas, Missouri, Eastern Nebraska, big chunk of Iowa, southern Minnesota, Wisconsin. That corridor has been very, very wet over the last 60 days or so. In fact, there are some places in Texas where we grow a lot of peanuts and cotton that are at 1,000% of normal. That's right, 1,000% of normal in rainfall over the last 60 days. So they've had very small harvest windows. We, of course, have been hearing reports about what this means in terms of, mold issues, also with germination issues, and certainly some very, very wet fields to getting to do field work in. So it's what's kind of bad to say here is that the pattern is actually unblocked right now. So as we kind of press forward, we're going to continue to see next week repeated weather systems moving across the country, which basically just means we shorten up the harvest window for what's left, by having an active pattern. So I'm watching another one sneaking through the kind of the U.S.-Canadian border on Tuesday, another low pressure system. It'll drag a cold front through the United States, right through the middle of the U.S., going to the Corn Belt. And then because we're going to dig this deep, deep trough into the central part of the U.S., we're watching for another very powerful system to develop by the end of next week. So instead of getting, these nice long 10 plus day, stretches of drier weather, having an unblocked setup basically means when you look over the next 15 days and kind of average it all together, the eastern half of the Corn Belt, and I kind of define the eastern half being from, eastern Iowa all the way over to Ohio, looks to be very wet. It's also going to be wet along the southern states where they've already had a lot of problems this year with very heavy rainfall or landfalling hurricanes. And I'll also say this, when we get the pattern set up like that, the chances of us having one of those Indian summers, where you get in this late middle fall time period where you get this late summer-like weather, looks to be like it's not going to happen. We've kind of slid into fall, and I think we're going to be staying with this kind of weather. Now, I think we should also really focus a lot on what's going on in South America. We've noticed that over the last 20 to 30 days that Argentina, even though they've had a few weather systems move through, has favored higher atmospheric pressure and cooler conditions. But that right now at this time of year also means things have been relatively dry. So I was looking at some of the data from the Meteorological Service there out of Argentina, and they've got some of their most productive land. So I'm talking about Cordoba, Buenos Aires province. These regions have been much drier than average. Now, thankfully, the pattern is changing a little bit to bring in some precipitation for them, but it's going to be very, very wet north of them. I'm talking about Brazil's southern growing regions. And remember, a big difference between this year and a year ago is that a year ago, the Brazilian monsoon was about a month late in arriving, and therefore that pushed everything back. This year, we've had regular rainfall through Mato Grosso, Goiás, the Tocantins, then getting down into Paraná, Rio Grande do Sul, those southern growing regions as well. It's almost been too wet at times in the southern growing regions, but overall, this is a much, much, much more favorable start to the growing season in Brazil than it was a year ago. And that also means we know that the safrinha crop or the second crop will likely go in on time, something we've been talking about quite a bit on this show. So when I kind of look at Brazil right now, I don't see any major red flags at this point, other than maybe the Argentina is going to struggle to get in their first crop. But overall, things look pretty good south of the equator. But we will continue to watch the development of that weak Modokai El Nino and what it might do to our winter weather here, possibly keeping things warmer out west and cooler out east, and what it might possibly do to stress some crops down, especially in Brazil's eastern and northern growing regions as we continue throughout this year. But the signal's weak, which means that's why we watch it, you know, every week when we call in on Friday.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
Yesterday afternoon, we recorded Commodity Week. Our panelists for the program included Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson, and from right here in Champaign County, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing. I asked Kurt to begin the show what his assessment of the current marketplace looked like for both corn and soybeans.
Well, it's kind of several factors. One is we did have an 80 cent up in the beans and a 35 cent up in the corn off those lows, and we were a little overextended. Two, we priced in some wet weather and some decent export news. But as the week went on, I think investor confidence kind of shrank. We saw the dollar rise. We saw the Dow fall out of bed. So there's a little investor confidence concern there. Then, two, Thursday morning we came in and just totally got surprised by the weekly export sales report that came in lower than expected. Then lastly, Russia was in also talking about not curbing wheat exports. So there were several factors that all gelled going into Thursday's trade.
So this turned into something that was kind of ugly on Thursday, not horrible, but set the tone down at the bottom end, I think, of the technical range?
Well, wheat's a disaster now. If we can't get December wheat back above $4, it's probably going to slowly bleed here for a while. We're supposed to have the cheapest wheat in the world, and we're not getting those sales. The sales are running behind, so wheat's kind of the one to watch. If it's going to be the leader, hopefully it's not the leader to the downside. Bean-wise, we're down to a 62% retracement back down to the low, so technically it's an area it needs to hold in through here. We're seeing a situation, too, where South America might turn too wet. Hopefully here they'll have a problem and get this thing turned around. Corn-wise, we're not quite halfway back down to the lows. Corn fundamentally, another, you know, 2, 3, 5 cents hopefully will catch here and stabilize.
Hey, Bill Mayer, I want to pick up on the wheat for just a second. As I talk to the meteorologist about Europe in particular, where the bulk of the wheat is grown for the planet, on both hemispheres, northern and southern, so for the whole of the year, they've been suffering through a drought that started very early in the year, sometime I think in May, has continued now. Usually we don't worry a lot about a crop. However, an overwintering crop that's come into the ground in these kinds of conditions might be something worthwhile to watch.
Yeah, I'd seen some pictures on the internet, on Twitter, and that earlier this week from Germany, and things really look pretty rough over there from that standpoint. We also have some problems in Argentina, really, as far as they're concerned. And Australia, of course, had a poor crop earlier this year. So I think everybody was really of the mind that wheat could hold. It's going through this $5 level on the nearby was really kind of a surprise, I believe. I think we have everything just kind of in a very uncertain situation globally. There's a lot of concern starting from the Chinese economy and how that's going to affect the global economy. You know, we have these bomb threats over here, or bomb that have been delivered over here. I mean, that's unstable, non-stable situation. I think from a world perspective, that looks like that's scary to the rest of the world. So I think all that just kind of combined to get that wheat going lower here today. I agree with Kurt. It'd be nice if we get back above that $5 level before the week's out here. If we can, I think you're probably looking about another 35-cent drop in the market. So fundamentals really haven't had a lot to do with what we've been looking at here this week.
Well, let's come back to some of the fundamentals, Jackie Vakes, for halfway through the harvest or thereabouts for corn. Coming to that for soybeans, we've got a long ways yet to go, especially when you go to the west, and not very far to the west. The I-State, Iowa, is running well behind. What does that mean to the marketplace?
Well, I think, you know, the market definitely depends on the results that we're seeing out in the fields. And, you know, when you have you're seeing some phenomenal results. I sat with someone yesterday who was bragging about that. He had an 86 bushel average on beans on 1,000 acres, you know. You can't complain about that for certain, but I think that the worst situation is still to come. We haven't seen the results of the rains that we've had, you know, and in traveling, and which, you know, I've been doing, there's just a tremendous amount of beans that are standing out there yet. I'm surprised they're standing. I've only seen a few fields that were really down along the freeway, but, you know, every time you see a field that's been attacked by the wind, and we've got plenty of wind, it just makes for more field loss is what it is. And so I think as we go forward, everybody's going to be paying a lot closer attention to what the farmer is saying about what's happening out there.
Yet they haven't so much to this point. Do you think this really can make a difference in the marketplace?
Well, I think they've got most of the worst-case scenario priced in. In other words, I think most of the highest yields are probably into the marketplace. Maybe we'll crawl a little bit yet. But at the same time, we have so many outside forces, Todd, that are affecting this marketplace. You know, you look at we're just talking about wheat. When you talk about wheat, and you look at the value of our dollar. You know, wheat is not a big export market for us. And when the dollar goes the way it is, it's being hurt more and more. I think, too, you have to look at the soybean situation and the Pacific Northwest and North Dakota, South Dakota almost have lost their market. And so are they going to plant as many beans next year, or are they just actually going to go to wheat and more wheat? You know, and I think all of that is being kind of talked about in the background. And there's just no definitive pattern as to what's really going to happen at this point.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson, joined us on our Commodity Week program recorded yesterday afternoon. The whole of the program up online already at willag.org. You can listen to it there on demand anytime you'd like. Many of these stations will run the program over the weekend. And if you can stay with us here on our home station, you'll hear the rest of Commodity Week shortly. When we come back, we'll take a look at the agricultural newscast right here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Don't forget to buy those tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. It's coming up the 20th day of November in Normal, Illinois. Tickets are just $40 and available online at farmassetsconference.com.
It's National Mincemeat Pie Day. The origin of the mincemeat pie goes back to the Middle Ages, where chopped liver, boiled egg yolks, dried fruit, and spices were wrapped in a fried or baked pastry. By the 16th century, the mincemeat pie was considered a Christmas specialty. On this day in agricultural history in 1825, the 363-mile-long Erie Canal was finished. Connecting the Great Lakes to the Hudson River and Albany, it provided a water route from the Great Lakes to New York City and the Atlantic Ocean, and began the Great Canal Building Era in the U.S. Canal boats facilitated exchange of manufactured goods from the city with agricultural products from the Midwest. In 1854, Charles William Post was born. An American industrialist, he founded Post Cereal Company and created Grape Nuts Cereal. Post was being treated at the sanitarium of John Harvey Kellogg, where he was fed a grain-intensive vegetarian diet. That provided the inspiration for the manufacture of Postum, a grain product intended as a coffee substitute. 1 year later, Post followed that up with Grape Nuts, and 7 years later, he added Elijah's Manna to the lineup. That cereal is known today as Post Toasties. And that's this day in agricultural history.
In today's agricultural news, the AFBF, the American Farm Bureau, still expects Congress to complete a five-year farm bill this year, despite the outcome of the November elections. Yes, there's a big election coming up, but AFBF's Andrew Walmsley says that won't change producers' need for a five-year farm bill or the expectation that there'll be one.
You know, focus is on the election, but I think the committee staff and those members that are the principals understand the importance of getting a farm bill done, and they've all continued to communicate that an extension talk isn't helpful. It's not on the table, and it's their intention to get a farm bill done this year.
And even if post-election politics dictates waiting until a new Congress, Walmsley argues putting off the farm bill is not a good idea.
Well, I don't think it gets any easier next year. You know, even if a chamber or two switches or flips, it's not going to be by a wide margin. At least that's what the pollsters and pundits are saying.
And Walmsley argues there's every reason to finish the farm bill this year.
And I think when you look at the big picture, there's a lot of pressure to get it done. We need the certainty of a five-year bill. You look at the challenges agriculture is facing. We've talked about low commodity prices, where markets are, the challenges we've seen with Mother Nature this year.
Walmsley says those difficulties and some relief on the trade front have kept down any big outcry over the lack of a farm bill, but he insists producers expect a bill to get done this year. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., and with policy for just a moment. You know, the Trump administration just completed the renegotiation of NAFTA, which in the future could be called the USMCA. However, the North American Free Trade Agreement replacement apparently may not benefit dairy farmers, that according to the Federal Reserve Bank. A report by the Federal Reserve says gains made by the new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement that will replace NAFTA are too small and too far in the future to actually help dairy farmers. The Minneapolis Fed reported that a substantial number of dairy operations have exited the business since the beginning of the year. Dairy was a fixture of the NAFTA renegotiation effort as concessions from Canada were long sought by President Donald Trump. Before the new agreement, U.S. dairy farmers faced strict import quotas and tariffs. Under the new agreement, which still needs congressional approval, Canada agreed to drop restrictions, allowing U.S. producers to supply up to 3.6% of Canada's dairy market. And finally today, Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa has warned voters in his state that if they elect a Democrat as governor, he could be replaced by a Democrat. Grassley is wanting to ensure his seat will remain in the Republican Party while acknowledging his age and the potential for health woes within the next 4 years. Grassley turned 85 last month and told a crowd of voters, quote, "Something could happen to me in the next 4 years. I don't want a Democrat appointing my successor," unquote. A recent poll showed that the Democratic candidate Fred Hubble held a narrow lead over Republican Kim Reynolds. If Grassley were to step down later in his term, he says Hubble would appoint a Democrat to take his place. Grassley, a longtime agriculture and biofuel supporter, was first elected to the Senate in 1980. He insisted that he is very, very healthy and did not rule out running for re-election. Grassley chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee and serves on the Senate Agriculture Committee. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.